From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. It's the time of year when municipalities and counties are finishing up their budget proposals for the next fiscal year. The North Carolina Republican Party rolled into town over the weekend for its annual convention and featured star speakers Laura Trump and Kellyanne Conway. And the Supreme Court has delivered another blow to North Carolina's current legislative districts, but without specifying a remedy. With us today to unpack all of this is WECT and WSFX evening anchor and assistant news director John Evans. He also directs the political coverage for both stations. John Evans, welcome to Coastline.
Thanks, Rachel. Good to see you again.
And we're very glad to have with us today Adam Wagner, reporter with Gatehouse Media, which owns the Star News. Welcome, Adam Wagner.
Thanks for having me, Rachel.
And we're inviting your questions on this Wednesday. If you'd like to ask your own question about the recent local news coverage of a particular story, you can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. So we need to start today, Adam Wagner, with a story that the Star News just posted on its website this Wednesday morning about Cape Fear Public Utility Authority and a chemical that is produced upriver at a Fayetteville plant that CFPUA doesn't seem able to remove from the water supply. What's the story here?
So there was a DuPont, now it's Chemours plant, which is kind of a spinoff of DuPont plant in Fayetteville. And they made this chemical that was used to make Teflon there, and they couldn't make it anymore. There's been all kinds of lawsuits around it. So there's this alternative, and it turns out the alternative kind of does a lot of the same damage as the original chemical.
To people, you mean?
To people, yeah. And there's not really a good way to get it out of water right now.
And so right now testing is showing that raw water sampling isn't any different in concentration of this chemical
from
treated water.
And it's not only CFPUA. It could also be affecting the Brunswick and Pender water supplies as well. CFPUA is the one we focus on in the story because it's the largest one. But all three counties are getting their water from the same place.
And so I understand that this is something that the Star News will be following up on because there's a lot to unpack here. And this is the first story of probably many. But how serious is this? Do people need to be concerned about drinking water in southeastern North Carolina right now?
That's really the lingering question. I mean, we know that there are some health effects, but we don't know. One of the big follow-up stories is probably going to be how much of this water is really safe. You know, can I – how many cups of water from this water supply should I drink a day? Should I take a shower? Should I – that kind of thing. And to this point, that's completely unanswered.
That's an open question. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing the follow-ups at starnewsonline.com. Last night, Tuesday night, both WECT and the Star News reported on a meeting – opponents of offshore drilling and seismic testing are reorganizing, getting together once again. John Evans, for people who haven't been following this issue, wasn't the Mid-Atlantic region taken out of consideration for offshore drilling and seismic testing by the Obama administration?
It was, and I think the fight and those who were meeting last night wanted to make sure that it was not forgotten that this is still a question that's up in the air as you move forward. And last night, they seemed to want to get together. They did get together again. I guess that's a definite. But, you know, they want to make sure that it's on the top of people's minds, that they know that this could be put back in, that things are changing with the new administration over the old. And so they met last night, and I think they'll continue meeting and continue keeping people top of mind that this could possibly change moving forward.
Adam Wagner.
And it's important here to note that the Trump administration has really, with the America First Energy Plan, with some of the moves by BOEM, the Bureau of Energy Management, and the Department of the Interior, they want this to happen. The America Energy First.
They want offshore drilling to happen in the Mid-Atlantic.
Well, I wouldn't maybe.
Okay.
But I wouldn't go quite that far yet. They definitely want seismic testing to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Seismic testing, it says, the American Forest Energy Plan says we want to streamline seismic testing. And there's the interim director of BOEM has sent letters indicating that they want to. The National Marine Fisheries had a conference call earlier this week saying they're beginning to accept comments based on the impact to mammals. And that's also important to note. If you want to submit a comment on this to National Marine Fisheries, it can only be about the impact to mammals. It cannot be about the issue of offshore drilling. So that's their purview.
How much do we know about the impact on marine mammals at this point? Is there definitive science?
It's – yes, but the definitive science is kind of based on where it's coming from. But we know that the feds are saying that it can impact their – well, it can chase them away from their habitats, first of all. When you ramp up these drilling rig or testing rigs, they sort of push the mammals away. So it's fleeing, it impacts their behavior. Or the question about the lasting impact is, can it damage their sonar, damage little things inside their ears that let them find their way around the ocean?
And you're drawing a distinction between the seismic testing part and the offshore drilling part. Seismic testing is the precursor, is that right?
So you need seismic testing to figure out how much of a resource is there. And in North Carolina, we know that there's some, but there's really not, compared to like the western Gulf of Mexico, there's not as much. In North Carolina, the resource is probably between 35 and 100 miles off the coast. So it's not like one of the things that environmental groups are concerned about with this is that it waives the 50-mile buffer that the Obama mm-hmm. administration put in. And we're probably not going to at any point see drilling like 3 miles off the coast like in Mobile, Alabama. But we might see it 35 miles off the coast in 10 or 12 years.
And we also – we don't really know what the resource is, right? I mean, there's speculation.
Well, and Adam is much more versed on this than I am, but I would think that the seismic testing really has to be done in order to definitively tell you what the – you know, what the resource is. I mean, I think there's been speculation. There's been talk that it could be, but the seismic testing is what many are concerned about, A, because of what Adam talked about, the potential fallout, but B, you know, the speculation right now is not 100%. The speculation is rampant. The resource has not been definitively proven yet.
Governors from a handful of states – and including North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper, have said that despite President Donald Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Accord, they will proceed as if they are still part of that accord and held to the same standard. John Evans, what are state legislators, is anyone weighing in on this yet in terms of what this really means?
Well, again, from what I've – not being up there on a daily basis, you don't know what's being talked about in the halls of the General Assembly. I saw what Attorney General Josh Stein came out and said that he was in support of what the governor had said. There was something that came across the desk yesterday about an environmental effort that was Tim Moore, the speaker, was talking about in and again, Adam being in the environmental wheelhouse, we'll know a little bit more about that. But there seems to be a push environmentally in the General Assembly that does have Republicans and Democrats on the same page. Whether it's specifically about continuing with the climate accord writings and specific rules and regulations, I'm not purview on. I can defer to Adam on that.
Adam Wagner.
So we had a story in today's paper just sort of gauging local people's reaction to the Paris Accords. And there's a conversation with Tom Tillis in there. There's a statement from David Rauser as well as Cooper and Stein. Mm-hmm. And the most telling conversation in that story I thought was with Tim Perfetta, who works at Duke now. And he was a senior aide to Joe Lieberman on climate things. And he noted that when we talk about local policies, state policies, talking about it in the realm of the Paris Accord isn't necessarily helpful, because you immediately get political. And when you phrase it instead as just business, this is business, this is good for the environment, this is good for the economy, that's a more beneficial conversation to have on both sides. And that's what we're seeing with this bill that's working its way through the legislature right now, which is really designed to boost the state's solar arrays.
So what will this bill do?
So it would – I have notes here. It would make it – the bidding process would be a little more competitive for solar, and it would also allow municipalities and sort of smaller solar arrays to have a little bit more of a competitive advantage. That really hasn't been true in North Carolina to this point.
But it was interesting that I saw that when Governor Cooper came out, and you know, you get on a daily basis, you get it, Rachel, and I'm sure Adam, you get it as well. You get just tons of emails that come across from the governor's press office and speaker's press office and the Senate Pro Tem's press office. But the one that came out of the governor's press office that actually touted bipartisanship on this one issue really kind of made my eyebrows kind of stand. I was like, well, it's something that they're moving forward on, because things have been so charged between the governor's office and the General Assembly. To see them both, the House Speaker came out earlier in the day with his news release. To see them both come out and tout something like that, I thought was really a nice thing to see on behalf of the people of North Carolina and the bipartisan effort in both of those chambers.
With the heightened political division, can you think of any other issue at this point right now in Raleigh on which there is that kind of bipartisan support?
Well, I would think the opioid crisis, getting together and trying to put money in for something like that. I think you've seen people on both sides. Now, whether the same amount of money is in both budgets, I haven't done specifically. I know there are programs from both. But that's the other one that you have seen them come together on this year, because Wilmington is so high in the, you know, number one when it comes to opioid abuse. But I think that seeing that yesterday was a pleasant surprise. I'll coin it as that, in at least when it came across my desk yesterday.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a reporter roundtable today with Adam Wagner of Gatehouse Media and John Evans of WECT and WSFX. If you have your own question for our journalists today about local coverage on a particular issue, you can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. As the state GOP convention rolls out of town, local governments are considering their final budgets for the next fiscal year, and a utility in Brunswick County faces opposition from the county and one of its largest municipalities. We're talking today with local journalists who cover these stories. John Evans is evening anchor and assistant news director at WECT and WSFX, where he also directs their political coverage. And Adam Wagner reports for Gatehouse Media, which owns the Wilmington Star News. And we're taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And before we get into this very public kerfuffle over the new Hanover County budget process, let's just talk briefly about the Supreme Court decision that came down earlier in the week around legislative redistricting. John Evans, at issue were 9 state Senate districts, 19 state House districts. This was carved out in a plan that was adopted by the legislature in 2011. What did the Supreme Court actually say today? Because it was a blow, but it wasn't really clear as far as what state leaders need to do.
Well, they said that the districts were racially gerrymandered, that the lawmakers put too many black voters into districts and then created unfair advantages in other districts, made it tougher for black candidates to be elected in districts outside of those that were put together specifically that way. The thing of it is they did not, the justices did not mandate that new elections needed to be held this year. In fact, to what I have read, they really didn't come out with a specific remedy for what needs to be done. I imagine we will see that at some point in time. I would think that lawmakers would have to be given some kind of remedy, since they developed the problem during the redistricting process. But it would be interesting to see, you know, we already have two plans for where they want to move the primary elections in North Carolina. The Senate plan would be to have them starting in 2018. The House plan would be to have the primary elections moved up from May to March, but wait till 2020. So they're already talking about primary elections in 18 and 20. So I imagine we'll start talking about the redistricting and how those districts will be for those elections fairly soon as well.
And since you brought that up, why does the state legislature want to move up the primaries? What benefit is there to North Carolina for
that? Well, they want North Carolina to have more of a play. They want North Carolina voters to be important when it comes to the next presidential primary. They don't want it already decided by the time it comes into North Carolina in May, which was the reason we were moved up into March in 2016. And so, you know, I would think as the negotiating moves forward, now we have to see if the Senate approves the House version, which delayed it, moved it, but delayed it to 2020, or whether they vote it down and then they negotiate and see where they want it to go. There's going to be a lot of negotiating going on in Raleigh in the next 3 or 4 weeks on several of the issues, budget, that bill, and some other ones, too.
Adam Wagner, new Hanover County commissioners are likely to pass their budget for the next fiscal year on June 19th. But there was a pretty striking turn of events over the cancellation of a public hearing 2 weeks beforehand. What actually happened?
So the county commissioners at that point decided that they weren't going to hold their first public hearing. I forget what the exact date was. On the date it was originally scheduled. And then Rob Zappel, who's a Democratic commissioner, came out and said, well, I'm going to have one anyways. I'm going to go to the New Hanover County Courthouse and we're going to do the public hearing. And a large part of that was the provision in the budget that would cut the funding from 10 different nonprofits in the county. It's about $135,000.
And this was a philosophical issue among county commissioners in terms of funding some of those nonprofits. But we have Rob Zappel talking about why he thought this was an important thing to do. This was not a sanctioned county commission public hearing at all. This was a hearing that he held on his own for anyone to come and make their voice heard. Let's hear what he had to say.
I thought it would be appropriate and a wonderful opportunity for the community to be able to come in and express their views, to make comments on the public, on the budget that we have coming up. And so I asked for and received permission to have a community meeting in the same venue where we meet as commissioners.
And while we're at it, I should say Rob Zappel is a member of the governing body of this radio station, the Board of Friends of Public Radio. Woody White also had something to say. He insists that canceling that public hearing was in no way removing members of the public from the process. Let's hear what he had to say.
The notion that changing or rescheduling from June 5th to June 19th is negative is just not an accurate reality of what's really taking place. It allows for extra 2 weeks for the public to be engaged and converse with their commissioners on what they believe is important to them.
John Evans, Woody White is saying that not having this public hearing didn't actually remove people from the public discussion process.
That's what he says. Yeah. He says, at this point in time, and from what I understand, the hearing and the vote are scheduled for the 19th. That's the latest that I heard. And so the hearing will take place. It was moved not for any – I think it was because a conflict is the reason that it was moved in the first place. I don't think it was because nobody wanted to have a meeting. I think it was moved because of a conflict that could not be avoided is what – as I had – remember our reporter coming back and saying. So that's what he said in your soundbite, was that he thinks there's another 2 weeks of people being engaged to talk about what they want to do, and they still will have a hearing on June 19th with the vote scheduled for the same day. Now, whether that can be changed, if there are any discussions that force a change in the budget plan, I don't know. But I don't think there's enough time to meet again, or maybe there is time to call a special meeting between then and July 1st when the budget is supposed to be put into place. I would think you'd have time if something needed to be done, but we'll have to wait and see. But right now they're scheduled on the 19th.
Adam Wagner.
Well, and it's also important to note that this is 2017. You can email your representatives. If you have feedback and there are things in this budget that are controversial, the nonprofits part in particular has drawn a lot of criticism.
And tell us why, Adam Wagner, that is such a point of controversy right now.
So it's not very much money to the county in the grand scope of things, but to some of these nonprofits that are running sort of being held together by in some cases bubble gum and masking tape, it can be a lot of money. And it's sort of where's the best bang for your buck? And the nonprofit's point is we're the best bang for your buck. And the county's point is, well, we're trying to save money wherever we can. That's our mission.
And we actually, Katrina Knight, who is the executive director of the Good Shepherd Center, spoke to our reporter, Vince Winkle, about what this cut would mean for her.
That $11,000 is on top of very significant cuts from HUD last year to our transitional housing for homeless veterans. We have a federal budget being proposed right now that could eliminate what are called community development block grant funds. That would be another $90,000, just completely gone from our shelter operations.
And so this is the heart of that philosophical discussion between county commissioners who say we need to cut everything we can possibly cut to other people who say, but these nonprofits are doing the work then that county government doesn't have to do. John Evans.
Well, I think those philosophical discussions are going on the county level. They're going on the state level. And they're also going on the federal level. And that is where I think the discussions end when it comes to the state, when we see the negotiations over the budget. I think that's why people need to watch those negotiations. You know, we've talked and, you know, people often talk and what's the phrase? They don't want to see how the sausage is made.
Right.
They want to see what the final product is.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you really have to see how the sausage is made to understand why the cuts and ask the legislators, the commissioners, the lawmakers, why they're cutting these programs and how this service is going to be provided if these programs are being cut. And not enough people, again, and this is one man's opinion. I think, you know, oftentimes many people don't pay attention until after the process is done.
Yes. And Adam Wagner, how many people showed up to this rogue public meeting that County Commissioner Rob Zappel had that was not an official county commission meeting?
I did not have count, but it was standing room only, according to our reporters that were there. And that's pretty striking. I mean, normally I'm sure John has covered as many budget things, probably a lot more budget things than I have. But you go to these meetings and two or three people get up and thank them and it's whatever, we're passing the budget. We're done. But this late in the game to be able to get a standing room meeting, a standing room only meeting about the budget is eyebrow raising. I mean, that's a big deal.
And what were some of the things that were said at this public meeting? So obviously we know that the nonprofits are fighting for their funding. That's part of it. But that wasn't everything that was said at this meeting.
I don't know. I was not there, so I'm not well versed enough to know exactly what it was. But you know, during this budget process, you have people that are often wondering why the cuts are being made and why they decide on one nonprofit versus another, or why money is being taken from one venue and put into the other. So as far as your specific question, I don't know what a lot of the questions were brought about. Just knowing what is talked about when people see that the final cut is being made, then they say, oh, I better get involved. Oftentimes it's many people who are not volunteers with the nonprofit or not specifically part of the nonprofit agency itself.
And as we look around at some of these other local budgets that are in the works right now, there's been talk around the town of Leland's budget. If that budget passes as it's currently proposed, it's going to be a pretty hefty property tax increase for town of Leland residents. And is that getting people involved? Have you seen residents in Leland?
Yeah, we covered did the story the other day on a public hearing, not a public hearing per se, an education session. People can go and learn about it. But, you know, they're talking about basically 40% as far as a jump in the tax. But when you look at Leland, you know, look at that's the fastest growing town in the fastest growing county in North Carolina. And there are things that need to happen there. And which is the question our reporter asked the town manager, David Hollis. And, you know, if you don't, you're going to have to do it at some point in time. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Adam Wagner. Good.
And Leland, for a long time, they've been trying to play catch up with their police to handle this population growth. They're trying to take the fire department under their wing now.
Right.
You guys have done a lot of reporting. We've done a lot of reporting on that.
Right.
About the volunteer fire department versus professional fire department. And that's just expensive. I mean, you want those services, but if you want them, you have to pay for them.
And part of it was, you know, they want to add, you know, 8 first responders between firefighters and EMS. And that's $660,000 or so is what I remember our reporter Connor Del Pree telling us about it. And so you're right. You know, you're talking about some of the major things that are being built over there right along Highway 17. If you go through other parts of Leland, you see the growth that's going on. And in many ways, some of that stuff is coming home to roost now. And if they don't do it now, it's going to be even higher when it comes to roost in another year or 5 years or 10 years down the line.
So this is really about planning, too.
I think it's also – it's more of a services – I would look at it as a service provider kind of an issue because they really are looking to try to do some of the things that Adam talked about with fire protection and EMS protection, yeah.
And looking at municipalities, the city of Wilmington recently passed the first reading of the budget. Adam Wagner, it looks like there's a tiny property tax decrease.
There is, yeah. We saw that. We also know that we're going to see a little bit of a hit from the bond last year, but the property taxes are sort of offsetting that. And it's one of those budgets that I was talking about earlier that sort of – it just kind of sails through without too many really, really hot spots.
Jumping back over to Brunswick County, Brunswick County commissioners also recently passed a resolution asking H2 Go, which is one of the water utilities in Brunswick County. Brunswick County has its own utility, and then there's H2 Go, which serves a different population, asking them to postpone action on the reverse osmosis plant. John Evans, does Brunswick County have any control over H2 Go?
I don't believe. I think that was more of an ask than it was anything else. Waiting to have it done until after the elections later this year is my understanding.
Adam Wagner.
So the backstory here is really that there's these 5 commissioners on H2Go's board, and 2 years ago, the board was signaling they wanted to build this reverse osmosis plant. That at that point, the price tag was $35 million. Now, last time I reported on it a little while ago, it was somewhere just north of $25 million. And 2 people on the board won election that are against this plant. Well, there's still 3 on the board that are for it. And there's really a push to, in this year's municipal elections, get those last 3 seats on the other side. And there's – the public opinion is – at least the vocal public opinion is very much on the side of those 2 that are against the plant.
And the 3 that are for it – excuse me. The 3 that are for it are all – up for election this year.
Yeah.
And so the you're right. I mean, the talk is have the election, see how it goes. If the voters will talk with their vote on whether they want to keep those who are for it in office or not have them if the push is for not to have the reverse osmosis plant.
So the town of Leland also just announced that they're appealing the granting of a permit by the state's Department of Environmental Quality to H2Go for that reverse osmosis plant. They're intervening in that process. Explain why Brunswick County and the town of Leland are against the building of this RO plant. Adam Wagner.
The town of Leland, it's their people. Their people are the main customers for H2Go. And it's their rates that would see a pretty significant hike from this. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, unfortunately. But Brunswick sells H2Go water. and it's also their people that would see this increase. And Brunswick isn't really – Brunswick's position is a little hazier than Leland's. Leland's is certainly against this plan. Brenda Bozeman and Pat Battleman will tell you that all day and twice on Sunday. But Brunswick's is more just – they're being a little more careful here, and they're saying, well, let's wait and see, and let's leave it in the hands of the voters, is really what Frank Williams, the county commissioner, chair,
is saying. Does Brunswick County stand to lose a lot, though, if they – if H2GO moves forward with this RO plant – do they stand to lose a lot of potential customers? I mean, isn't one of the statements that Brunswick County commissioners have been making, they've been saying we could conceivably provide water service to the entire county. We don't need this other utility.
They certainly could do that. And that's something that in a lot of discussions in Brunswick is one of the sort of background conversation drivers, is that maybe we do need to have a little bit more regionalization of the services here. But then you have the other side that says, well, if you look at Brunswick, there's four counties here, or four distinctly different counties in Brunswick County. And so it's a question of which way do you want to do that? Which way do you want to handle that?
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's a reporter roundtable with Adam Wagner of Gatehouse Media, which owns the Star News, and John Evans of WECT and WSFX. And we're taking your questions on this Wednesday. You can reach us by calling 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And when we come back from this break, we're going to hear from Murphy, or rather, Carl from Wilmington. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. On today's Reporter Roundtable, we're looking at recent coverage of local issues that directly affect your life. With us today to answer your questions about local coverage, Adam Wagner, reporter for Gatehouse Media, which owns the local Star News, and John Evans, evening anchor and assistant news director at WECT and WSFX. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Carl from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I was at the meeting that Rob Zappel called the other night. I think there's an important piece of information that no one has brought out, and that's the fact that the budget balances without these cuts. There is absolutely no fiscal need to make these cuts to these nonprofits. And that, in fact, this represents an ideological cut. Most of the cuts are going to affect the most vulnerable people in our population. And in fact, the county staff recommended full funding of all of these nonprofits, so that the idea that somehow we're, quote, needing to save money, we didn't need to do this. This is something that's ideological in nature by three members of the county board, and it really is a sad commentary on the state of the county board in New Hanover. So I just want to make sure people know we don't need to cut anything to balance our budget. We're fine. The staff in the county all agree with that, and this is ideological and really reprehensible. So
Carl,
I wanted to make that comment.
Are you affiliated with one of the nonprofits that...
I am not. I am simply a concerned citizen. I have no affiliation with any nonprofit other than the fact that I know that they serve us really, really well. I mean, these cuts are going to cut money from homeless people. They're going to cut money from veterans who are having drug problems. it's a sad commentary that when we have a balanced budget with all of this money included, we would go ahead and just cut this for ideological reasons. Very sad.
Carl, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Coastline. It's a reporter roundtable on this Wednesday. If you would like to weigh in, comment about local coverage of an issue, or if you'd like to ask our journalists a question, you can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We have John Evans with us today. He's evening anchor and assistant news director of WECT and WSFX. And we have Adam Wagner of Gatehouse Media, which happens to own the Star News. Let's talk about the recent state GOP convention that happened over the weekend. There were some pretty big Republican luminaries at this convention, John Evans. Mm-hmm. What were some of the big points that came out of Lara Trump's and Kellyanne Conway's appearances?
Well, Kellyanne Conway, from what I've been able to gather, was a hit with the audience inside. Was a magnet for some of the protesters outside, but that is, I guess, based on the ideological differences, not surprising. She basically said that it was the hard work of Donald Trump being in North Carolina, making appearances. That it was Mike Pence being in North Carolina, making appearances, that was the key to driving the success of the campaign. Governor Mike Pence appeared twice in southeastern North Carolina during that campaign, once in Wilmington, once in Leland. Mr. Trump was at UNC Wilmington. He was in Duplin County. I remember going up there and covering that event in Duplin County. You saw them here. While Tim Kaine was here for Mrs. Clinton, I don't remember her being in southeastern North Carolina. I think the closest she was at Fayetteville, if I'm not mistaken. That was what Kellyanne Conway said. She said the success was having the people who people wanted to hear from here in North Carolina several times during the campaign.
She said she's a numbers nerd. She really drills down into those county numbers.
Yeah. And one she brought up was Robeson County.
Yes.
Which turned and voted for Donald Trump. The proof is in the pudding in the fact that they, you know, there was a message that got out and it was a message that delivered in North Carolina and the state delivered for him.
Adam Wagner, how different was the coverage that was in the Star News this year versus what the Star News would have covered and how it would have covered it if this had taken place last year or the year before?
This is for the convention?
Yes.
Talking about? I don't think it's that different. We always take it seriously. It's a big deal, especially when it's in Wilmington. It's, anytime you have a convention here, that's important.
You specifically covered the protest.
Mm-hmm.
Describe the scene for us.
There were about 40 or 50 people out there. We're getting familiar with some of these people and some of their messages. And
this was just right across the street.
Right across the street, yeah. And at some points, shouting matches broke out with different groups. Or sometimes people tried to have a conversation and it's already tense in that situation. When someone tries to cross the street, the civility breaks down kind of quickly, unfortunately.
You didn't see anyone come to blows.
No.
It was just words,
right,
for the most part.
And just quickly realizing we're not going to get on the same page here.
And what were the protesters protesting?
A lot of it is the Trump administration. A lot of it is what the state is proposing in the different House and the Senate budgets and what might come down next. And they know that they have an audience. The GOP higher-ups are going to be there no matter what. You know where to find them. So you might as well put your message right in front of them. You can't miss it.
What about the local contingent, our local state leaders? It was interesting to me that, and I don't know for absolute certainty who, I know Holly Grange was there, but we didn't see Senator Michael Lee. We didn't see Representative Ted Davis. We didn't see any of our – I did see a Brunswick County commissioner there, Mike Forte. But where were the local Republicans, John Evans?
I don't know. I think that's a question to ask them. I know Congressman Rauser was there. I know Senator Berger was there. I know several of the main Republicans in Raleigh, and you know, obviously the 7th District Congressman were there.
Right.
But I think that's a good question to ask them. They may have had other events that day, other commitments. But you know, I do know several that were mentioned and that were in some of the reports that you know both the Star News and that we did that day. But you don't know whether something else was come up or some kind of other event that they had that day.
Well, just because they're not on stage doesn't mean they're not there.
Right.
If you walked around the top floor of that parking garage the other day, it looked like you were in the legislature parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right,
all the
right.
special license plates and things like that.
Yeah, there certainly was a lot of participation. Just do you know, Adam Wagner, how much participation there was from folks who happened to live right here?
I'm not sure. There's obviously every county has its own delegation, but it's a statewide event.
Right.
I mean, the protesters are mostly entirely local.
Right.
But that's on that side of things. As far as the much larger convention group goes, I'm not sure.
And speaking of our local delegation, I heard from one person who said there is reason to believe there could be hope for this region for recurring funding for film. Is this something that either of you have heard?
Well, both of the budgets, as far as I could tell, had money in it for the film grant. Again, I'm trying to think back and going, but I believe Michael Lee said after the Senate budget came out that it was recurring money. That means it would go back into the budget and wouldn't have to be secured every budget cycle. And that was one of the things that Senator Lee and, frankly, some of the other locals wanted to make a priority, was that, you know, even though if they may have favored the film tax incentive, and let's face it, when you look at what was shot, especially in Wilmington, when that film tax incentive was there, you could say, without stretching it, that it was a driver of major productions in the Wilmington area. But they wanted to, if they're not going to get the film tax incentive back, get the grant recurring. And that way it would be there every year and you'd know you'd at least have the $15 million, I think is what it was, in both years. You'd at least have the $15 million for the grant, and then whether you ever got the film tax incentive back. The film tax is in Governor Cooper's budget, but I don't think that really has much of a prayer of surviving when it gets to the General Assembly and starts the negotiating process.
The number of speakers at the GOP convention over the weekend who used the term fake news and or who made a point about the so-called mainstream media being purveyors of fake news, that was astonishing to me. It seemed to be most people. However, at the luncheon when Kellyanne Conway was speaking, she was asked the question about fake news and how to deal with it. And she made a point of saying, I don't believe that the entire mainstream media is biased. She was an outlier in her opinion at this convention. And she said, I also don't believe that most people are out there trying to put out fake news. She said, I do think that media organizations can be biased. And she gave examples of good news that had come out of the White House, more money for veterans, more money for infrastructure. And she said, I bet you didn't hear those stories this week because news anchors probably get about $100 each time they say Russia. But John Evans, as a member of the mainstream media and possible purveyor of fake news, what would you say to some of these politicians who just are beating the drum that you are not their friend? Not that you should be, but how do you approach this as a member of the media?
You know, fake news to me, and I think that's the key definition, is what many consider fake news. I believe, and again, one man's opinion, is that what many are calling fake news is news that is not positive toward them. Okay? Fake news to me is specific, intentional things that are meant to deceive. If you look at a website and then you look down and you see, you wouldn't believe what this 70s movie icon looks like now. And you, that is designed to get you to click on that, and it, that is a purveyance of fake news to me. Or somebody who intentionally goes out and puts out something that is not based in facts, is untrue, and is, you know, is intentionally meant to deceive. News that is not positive is proven factual, is news. Whether you want to call it fake news or not, that's the specific that I think they base it on. You go out and you say that Republicans are wrong. Well, they may call that fake news, but that's your opinion. You may go out and say Democrats are wrong. Democrats may call it fake news, but that's your opinion.
And as you say that, I mean, that is opinion, which is different
Correct.
From news. It's
right.
different from
yes.
what all of us sitting in this room do.
Deal with on a daily basis, yes.
Yeah. Adam Wagner, can you talk about what you see as a journalist, the relationship is between, say, a journalist and a politician?
Well, a lot of it's just mutual respect. I'm not going to misquote you. I'm going to treat you with respect. I'm not going to take your words out of context. And I think John has certainly dealt with a lot of this as well. But a
sure.
lot of it's just don't be a jerk. I mean, it's the same thing as being professional.
Well, and I also think, Adam, is that if you can walk away and have someone feel you were fair and objective, even if it's not a glorifying article, but if you were treated fairly and objectively, that's been the key to what I've done my whole life. I may write something that is not a glowing review, or it may criticize, or it may bring up points that you don't necessarily want to bring up. But if I give you an opportunity to respond, and I'm fairly, and if I treat you fairly and objectively, I've done my job. I can look in that mirror in the morning and do my and say that I've done my job well. But there are those in our industry, and Adam's shaking his head and you're shaking your head. You know there are people in this industry that do not do it that way. Just like there are people who don't do ditch digging or don't do plumbing or don't do electricity or whatever the case may be the right way. There are bad apples in every industry.
Yeah. A reporter asking a question is not a sign of bias. It's just literally our jobs.
Correct.
You know, there was a moment after Kellyanne Conway spoke, after the luncheon, when the press that were there were herded into a small briefing room for, you know, closer interviews with Kellyanne Conway and Lara Trump. And there was a moment when the media handler, and I don't know if you heard about this, John, you're smiling. You were in there, Adam Wagner.
I wasn't there, but Tim and I had a couple conversations about it afterwards.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And Tim Buckland of the Gatehouse Media
reporter.
As well.
Yeah.
Yes, he spoke up. But this media handler said there are no questions for Kellyanne Conway about policy. And if you even start to ask a question, I am going to shut you down so fast. And Adam Wagner, what did Tim Buckland tell you about what he did?
Tim said that he and Colin Campbell of the Raleigh News and Observer basically said, there's a First Amendment here. We can ask what we want. And then the ironic part of the story was, I think at some point during the interview, Kellyanne said, I'm here to answer policy questions.
Yes.
And the reporters just looked at each other and kind of shrugged and kept on doing their jobs.
Yes, yes. It was an interesting moment, and the press handler didn't say anything else after that. There is an omnibus gun bill moving through the General Assembly in Raleigh. John Evans, Representative Chris Millis, a Republican from Pender County, is a sponsor of that bill. What are some of the big rocks in the jar?
Well, that actually is on the House agenda for this afternoon when the House reconvenes at 2 o'clock. Basically, what it does is it eliminates the need to have a concealed carry permit. It allows adults who have a permit to carry a gun not to need one to have a concealed carry permit, not to be able to – they can carry a weapon concealed without the need of a special permit for it.
And it's going to the floor today.
It's on the House for a vote this afternoon at 2 o'clock on the agenda, yes.
That's this edition of Coastline. John Evans, Adam Wagner, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel. Good to see you.
Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast. Find it on the WHQR app or tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.